And welcome into the Bruins Beat, presented by our good friends over at Prize Picks. I'm Evan Marinofsky. That is Connor Ryan. Connor, what is up?
Evan, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. This Prize Picks thing is interesting, Connor. This Prize Picks, a new sponsor of our show, use promo code CLNS to get up to $100 cash back. So you deposit up to $100, they give you $100. And it's fun. It's like this. It's daily fantasy. I was playing it. I tweeted it out on Monday night. And it's an interesting way to play it. It makes the game a little more interesting. You know, you can pick,
spice things up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Shots on goal, goals, assists, points, goalies that have saves. And it just, it's added fun to the game. And it's a weird time of year, Connor, because, you know, this time of year is interesting with hockey because the trade deadline's gone. Bruins kind of have the second spot locked up. It's not the most interesting time of the hockey season. It's a fun one, but it's not the most interesting. This makes it more interesting. You know what else would make it interesting, though? If Pat Maroon went in the booth with Jack Edwards, I think that would make it
eventful. More interesting. Yes. Probably a lot of awkward silence, to be honest with you.
You think?
Yes, I do.
You don't think that they could, like, they could kind of have fun with it? You think it would be real, like, it would be awkward?
Yeah, I think it'd be extremely awkward if, considering I think their last meeting and how that went down, and I believe it was like about a, I think it was like a 10-minute conversation, a very spirited one. I think it was more one-sided. Yeah, I think it'd be very awkward.
Interesting. I don't know.
You know, there's like bygones, let bygones be bygones. I don't know, man. I don't know about that. I also listened to it again, like the actual, like when it happened. I was like, ooh, not great.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I could see it. But the part of me would think with Brick there, right, you could at least keep things going and maybe it could be kind of funny or they like mend and whatever. I don't know if there's any interest on Pat Maroon's part in doing that. I know Jack, I think it was Matt Porter who tweeted out that Jack said that, you know, he'd be, you know, oh, he's playing for the Bruins. I hope he wins every fight or whatever. I don't know if Pat Maroon's felt the same way. No one's asked him about that yet, right?
No.
No.
No, I think he's made his thoughts on that very clear in multiple interviews, I think, even after. I think he was on, I want to say it was like Spit and Chicklets or something like that and mentioned that before and was not happy then talking about it, so.
This is like, you know, when people, there was some, a couple months ago, someone went at Ty Anderson on Twitter. There's always people going at Ty on Twitter and went at him for, they said, you got to ask tougher questions. You guys got, the media's got to ask tougher questions. I'm going to impart here. I'm going to say, you guys got to ask tougher questions. Got to ask Pat Maroon about Jack Edwards.
About it's
got to
happen. Beef with a play-by-play reporter. Yes.
That's worth it. That's worth that. That's, you know what? That's just hard-hitting journalism. That's, yeah. That's standing up for the people. True. But that should be interesting. I'm curious what they end up doing with it. Cause I don't know if Pat Maroon can let it go.
Probably nothing.
You're right. Probably no, probably not a damn thing. But I talked about this with Hags on Sunday and I got really excited about it. Like it's an interesting thought. It's the time of year to do it. He's hurt too. So like there's that. But no, I mean, you're probably right. Nesson won't do anything with it. And that's kind of that. It would be more interesting than what happened on Monday night. Bruins lose to St. Louis 5-1 on home ice. Don't see that often. Obviously, the fifth goal was an empty netter. I didn't think the Bruins played particularly as terrible as the score made it out to be. I thought, you know, they had a lot of legit chances. Joel Hofer and net for the Blues, they always have these young goalies who come in out of nowhere who are quite good. Thankfully, I don't think the Blues will be going on any kind of Stanley Cup run this year, but we said that in 2019 too. What did you think of how they? What did you think of how they came out on Monday?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a tough game to gauge, right? I mean, you look at the final score, right? 5-1. It's unfortunate they end this homestand like that when it's probably their best stretch they've played in a long time, right? And you had wins against really good opponents. You know, I think the last week or so, Jim Montgomery has mentioned like the most important thing right now is building their game towards the playoffs, you know, getting right, getting their defense locked in, getting both goaltenders playing at a high level, getting, you know, some of these other guys further down the lineup rolling, like a DeBrusque, Zaka, Coyle, Frederick, all these guys feeling good about their games before you get to the middle of April and the playoffs start. And then you have a game like this. And again, as you said, like, I don't think this was like, even though the score might have reflected it, I don't think this was similar to the Islanders game or, you know, a couple of these other games where it's complete no-shows. Like, I feel like the Bruins controlled play for a lot of that game, had a lot of pretty good chances, especially early on, that Hoffer turned aside. And then it's just, I think, like, lapses in execution. Like, the Blues finished their chances. You had a couple of pretty bad miscues, a couple of bad odd man rushes where the Blues capitalize. Bruins have that lapse there with that 5-on-3 where they couldn't convert there. Special teams continue to be a thing that has popped up, whether it be the power play and not using that as an avenue to get back into these games. Cause like for the first like 8-9 minutes of the third period, it felt like the Bruins were going to make a game out of this. Like,
yeah,
come back, but it felt like they were going to, you know, they scored that goal and then all of a sudden they have two or three quality chances. Like, this game could be 4-3 with 5 minutes left the way they're playing. Had a power play in there, couldn't convert. It's just sometimes with that power play and look at the guys that are on there. There's been multiple times this season where they've had the opportunity to either extend the lead in the third period, where that's come back to bite them, or it's been kind of an easy avenue for them to build some momentum, start clawing themselves back into a game. And the Bruins for years have had the luxury of having a power play that's consistently been kind of a top five unit. It's kind of been up and down this year. And I think, you know, there's obviously a lot this team needs to shore up between now and April when it comes to the playoffs. But getting special teams, which has been kind of a pillar of this team for quite a few years now, getting that back to a level where you can at least chart out, like, all right, we can generate some offense here. We can generate some momentum on both sides of it, right? Either the power play or the penalty kill in terms of snuffing out the momentum for the other team. You just need a little bit more to that, especially when it gets to the playoffs, where it feels like the game goes through 7 or 8 momentum shifts, as the minutes kind of tick off the clock there.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, for so many years, it was like, all right, you know, the Bruins, they don't have a winger for Krejci, but at least they've got a power play and you can count on that.
Right.
Hasn't been the case this year. I agree with you. I thought in the third period, they were going to score a couple more. Unfortunate that Brazo's goal got knocked off. I mean, that's one of those where it's just like,
it's a battle play, Evan.
I mean, I just the offside, calling that offsides. I mean, yeah, it is, but it also like
you love calling that after like 3 or 4 minutes of replay too. That really gets the momentum rolling on there, and it sucks too because beyond like Brazo getting rewarded with a goal there, there's a fourth line. I think it was shots were 6-0 in their favor at 5-on-5 play. Like they had one of their better games, and honestly the whole kind of bottom six were pretty impactful. Like Frederick was holding on to pucks. They were generating some good, you know, offensive zone time there. Like that was kind of the game where you look at when you have some of these lines rolling, you can build some momentum. And I think you saw that at stretches, just couldn't finish and couldn't execute at kind of critical moments. So it's tough to kind of throw this in the same pile as games like the Islanders games or some of these other no-shows. There's that Washington game where they lost 3-0. They've had quite a few stinkers this year, but like, again, 5-1 is 5-1, still a loss, still sucks you end the homestand with a result like that. But there were still things that were, I think, positive in terms of, you know, adhering to winning hockey, just critical moments. You're not going to execute. You're usually not going to end up with a point or two in the standings.
No, you're not. I will say, though, and you mentioned it, that fourth line with Boqvist, Lauko, and Brazo. I mean, they were terrific. I thought, you know, Montgomery used them a lot in the third period. I obviously, you know, wasn't a close game, but they still were getting used. I like that crew. I mean, you know, Lauko, I think, has to prove it a little bit more for what he brings and bring it more consistently. Montgomery's talked about that this year. I think that, you know, ever since he mentioned that, you know, Lauko hasn't really been playing with the fire he was last year. I think you've seen a little bit of a different guy. But, you know, along with solidifying the power play, I think another thing is solidifying the fourth line. Because, you know, for a long time, the Corrali line was great at, you know, you could deploy them and shut down another team's top line or another, you know, other team's top players. And, you know, I don't know if the fourth line is close to that now. I don't know if you can trust them with that quite yet, but it's not solidified and it really won't be solidified until Pat Maroon's good to go and you see what you have with him. And, you know, I can't imagine you would put Maroon and Brazo on the fourth line together at the same time, but I don't know. I mean, if you're going against a big physical
slow team, line,
That's a very slow line. And people are like, what if you put like Johnny Beecher between? Like, Beecher'd be like halfway down the ice.
I know. It's like when you have like your like create a player in some of these, like either NHL or even NBA, you're just all the way down the court or down the ice already waiting, just waiting not to go offside. Like, just that's how essentially it would be. And again, like Beecher, it stinks because you look at the way he plays, and especially with faceoffs, like there's an appeal towards bringing him up, and he was kind of called up as just insurance on Monday because Coyle was kind of dealing with an illness. But yeah, the way that line would work, again, a lot of appeal in terms of maybe the physicality, the size, the puck possession. But Johnny Beecher would be parked on a bench pretty much waiting for those guys to show up in the ozone.
It's like an MLB The Show. Have you seen the people who make the weird looking like big dudes who, you know, and
it looks like dude looks like a Michelin man. I feel like when I had MVP baseball 2005, which is a goated game, I would always make my guy would be like a center fielder, would win like gold gloves, but I made him like 6'11 and like 325 pounds. The dude was an absolute behemoth, but he would always, he'd have 99 speed, like as one does. You have to be very gracious. No one makes a creative player to be like a 25 goal two-way player. Or like, you know, you hit 287 with 21 home runs, but you're the hot of the team. It's like, no, I'm going for fucking Cooperstown, man.
I agree. I'm the same way. I'm the exact same way. I want to dive into a little bit more of the inconsistencies that have hit the Bruins. But first, a quick word from our friends over at PrizePicks. Testing my skills on PrizePicks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. It's skill-based, so if you watch a lot of hockey like I do, pick more or less the number of shots on goal a top player like Connor Bedard or Sidney Crosby might have in a game. So download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Now, back to the show. So the fourth line is an interesting thing, just I think in terms of Boqvist has played his way into that role. He's been playing really well. Brazo's been playing really well. Richard looked good when he was up here a few weeks ago. Lauko's in the mix. You went out and acquired Pat Maroon. I think it's, you know, my guess would be, I doubt, you know, Maroon's coming back, you know, towards the end of this month. You have a couple weeks until the playoffs start. My guess would be you don't have a solidified fourth line for the first round. And I think it's more so you kind of rotate in based on matchups. We've talked about this a lot, right? You're going against a team like the Florida Panthers who are big and heavy. Maybe you try the Maroon Brazo thing, or maybe you go for more speed and you have Lauko and Boqvist with a Brazo or a Maroon. So I think there's a lot of options there. I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't know if that trio is gonna magically in the last month prove themselves to be a shutdown line. I don't think you're there yet, and I don't think you're gonna get there by the playoffs. So I think you just kind of gotta roll with what the matchup is. Inconsistencies though, you mentioned, you know, last night or Monday night against the Blues, there was that Islanders game a few weeks ago, and every now and again there's these kind of no-show nights. I know last night wasn't a no-show night, but just lopsided score type night. I think it hits at a bigger point in that this lineup is inconsistent. I don't think, you know, at the deadline, you really couldn't fix that. I mean, yeah, you could try to swing for the fences and give up future assets for Hanifin or Lindholm, but I don't think they were going to go that route. I'm glad they didn't. I think, you know, with the way the roster is, with the guys they have in place, I don't think they are, you know, the consistency of last year's team. You know, I don't think... You know, yes, there are going to be nights when a guy like Morgan Geeky gets a hat trick or Heinen gets a hat trick, but there are going to be nights when you don't notice those guys. And I think that's just kind of their roster. And I think, you know, that's why I don't have super high hopes for this team, because when they're going, they're going. But when they're not, they're really not. And I think, you know, that's sort of taken place over the last month, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's just the way the roster is built and kind of the hand that was dealt to this team, right? Like, you look at last year where you had, you know, Charlie Coyle on the third line, and I think he's proven this year he can be a guy yep. that can step up into a top six role, but he's your third line center. You've got Taylor Hall, who's won the Hart Trophy, who's on the third line. Like, you've got all these other players, like Trent Frederick's a guy that's looked to become more of a middle six guy. He was pretty much stamped on the third line. You had, you know, a veteran like Nosek on the fourth line. You've got, you know, all these guys, Bergeron, Krejci, who've been, you know, extremely consistent over their careers. And then you look at like Bertuzzi, you look at like, you had so many guys in featured roles that, like, even if one or two guys is playing, you know, to like their B game or what have you, like, you've got so many guys that can, you know, hit that same, you know, consistency that you're still going to get like an overall strong effort. You're going to have guys that are going to, you know, deliver in clutch moments, execute in critical situations. And more often than not, you're going to win games. You're going to, you know, be in the mix this year when it's, you know, again, guys who I think have been steady, who have exceeded expectations, but you look at like JVR or Heinen or you know, Coyle or Zaka, they're not going to be putting up their A games every single night. Like, you look at like, even on like the third pairing, like a guy like Kevin Shattenkirk, sign him for $1 million. He's been totally serviceable for what you're asking for, but you're not going to have, you know, stellar games every single night from a guy like him. That's not a criticism. You know, it's just realistic for what this team is, right? This is a team that had to get very creative, had to rely on either younger players, and you've seen that from a guy like Mason Lorai, or value adds that, again, have, I think, carved out steady roles, but you have to go in with the expectation they're not going to be locked in and playing at a high level every night. That's just the way things are. And if you're the Bruins, I think we've seen it, right? They've been inconsistent. And then when they're in games where guys are all pulling on the rope, or they're all engaged, they're all buying into how they want to play, like that, you know, the home game against the Maple Leafs, where they're like toppling them with their every single shift. They're playing physical. They're generating high danger chances, limiting chances around their own net. Like, when they're playing like that, that looks like a team that could win a round or two or three, right? Like, when they're playing at that level, just, you're not going to get that every single night. And it's pretty much in the playoffs. You're just relying on, you know, your key pieces, the Pastrnaks, the Marchands, the Swayman and Ullmarks, and two or three guys getting hot. Like, all of a sudden, all it might take is Zaka getting on a roll, or Frederick on the third line getting on a roll, or DeBrusk especially moving his feet and impacting the game. Like, I think that's just gonna, it's kind of just how it is. Like, you're not gonna get maybe consistent performances every night, but if you have certain guys that carry the lineup buying in and playing at a high level, this team can go far, but it's not the way they're constructed. It's not, of course, anywhere close to what last year was in terms of just how many guys you could rely on night in and night out to hold your team up.
I think that's the biggest thing. And like, you know, it's not a given that one of Heinen, Zaka, Geeky, Frederick, DeBrusk, Van Riemsdyk is going to step up in any given night. You know, I mean, a lot of those guys are legit veterans who are going to give you serviceable efforts, but you might not get that every night. And you know, the one thing I think is in there that is in their favor, and this kind of goes back to last Thursday, is I do think they win a first round matchup with the Leafs. I still do not believe in the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I know Leafs fans who watch this or will find this will, that'll come back to get me at some point. I'd pick the Bruins in that matchup, and I think that's a better matchup than potentially if they were the number one seed facing a team like Tampa in the first round, or
the Islanders
are hot, yeah. That's another interesting one. They're always a tough out in the playoffs, and like, to me, I would rather go with the devil, you know. And that's the Leafs. So I hope the Bruins kind of stay in that number two spot. And the Panthers are good. I mean, the Panthers are legit. I think they're probably the favorite in the East right now. So they'll probably stay at number one. I want to touch on the deadline. You and I have not had a chance to discuss the deadline and what that means going forward. Quickly, though, a word from our friends at Factor Meals. Let me tell you about my good friends over at Factor Meals. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. 2-minute meals, Fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. Pancakes, smoothies, and more. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. And of course, no prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. They're flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Factor's the perfect solution. If you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required, sign up and save. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. So, head to factormeals.com/Bruins50 and use code Bruins50 to get 50% off. Again, that's code Bruins50 at factormeals.com/Bruins50 to get 50% off. Now, back to the show. So the deadline, Mark Diver and I were live when it ended. Diver was as comfortable as he always is, just chilling, watching NHL Network in the recliner. I don't know how he has his laptop like on his stomach. I don't know how he does it, but he does it. Green. And
it's so cool.
It is so cool. It is. For all the lighting that we look at and, you know, setting it up perfectly, he just sits and does it. So good for him. But we discussed the deadline kind of as it happened, initial thoughts. So, you know, I've had a couple days to think about the deadline. I know you have as well. You did a solo show on the deadline. Was that before the deadline or after you did a solo show?
That was before. Yeah, that was when that was when the Elias Lindholm rumors were going off. And then Hanifin got traded in the middle of the thing. And I was just like, I think talking about like, well, you could trade Lauri and like Patra maybe. And if you're trying to get a guy like Noah Hanifin, and then it was like an awkward pause. And I'm like, I'm trying to keep on talking, but my brain's not competing. So I'm like, and Lauri is going to stay here because no Hanifin's in Vegas. But I trudged through it.
I felt so bad because we're supposed to record and I wasn't able to. I felt so bad about that.
It's the deadline season, man. We all overcome.
It is. And you did. But it's interesting. I mean, you know, the Bruins don't go for the big fish. I know a lot of insiders were like, hey, they're going to be the most interesting team on deadline day. They go out, they got Pat Maroon. They went out and got Andrew Peak. You know, there were reports. They were trying to trade Linus Olmark. They were right there. And that's kind of where I want to start because Olmark kicked ass on Saturday. And obviously there was a lot of comments from him and Swayman after, you have the goalie hug where Swayman's like, you're going to stay. And it's interesting because, you know, Elliot Friedman talked about it, about how emotional a week it was for Linus Olmark. And Swayman's numbers have been better this season. And, I think that kind of was expected given Swayman's development, given Olmark, you know, how good he was last year, coming down a little bit. But it wouldn't shock me if the trade thing's been over Olmark's head all year. You look at, you know, the rumors of last off season that the Bruins did try to trade Linus Olmark around the draft. That gets to guys. And I know this week especially was tough for Linus Olmark, but it wouldn't shock me if it's been over his head all year. And now that's gone. He might get traded in the offseason, but he ain't getting traded in the next couple months. He knows that. He knows he's here. He knows he's with this team. And given how well he played the other day, it is an interesting thing. Like, what if the tide starts to turn here? Not saying Swayman's going to get traded, but that Linus Olmark starts to take the bulk of the games. Or Linus Olmark, because right now Swayman's your game one starter. You know, would it shock you if in the next couple weeks that shifted and Linus Olmark suddenly was more in the driver's seat going into the playoffs?
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, this is a guy that, as you said, I think this has been weighing on him probably the whole year. As you said, there was these rumors at the draft last year, probably going to continue this upcoming offseason, right? I mean, the writing just seems to be on the wall. As much as both Swayman and Olmark, you know, have made it evidently clear they love playing, playing together, being part of this, you know, 1-2 punch. If Swayman signs for $7 million with a new extension and the Bruins are committing $11-12 million to their goalie rotation, it just doesn't seem feasible. I mean, hell, if they win a cup doing a full rotation, maybe then they bring it back and they bite the bullet there with committing that much money. But If you're Ullmark and one, you have kind of this at least temporary relief of knowing you're staying put here, and then add in the fact that it's probably one motivation of, you know, internally for him of like, yeah, you tried to trade me, like, look what I can do. I won the Vezina last year. Again, the playoffs were a different story, but this is still a guy who's viewed as one of the better goalies in the NHL and wants to prove it. And then also, like, with that writing being on the wall, like, this might be the last run of those two guys together as a tandem. So I'm sure that also plays into it. And again, once you get to the playoffs, all these narratives, all that motivation, everyone's motivated to lift the cup in the middle of June, right? I'm sure the Bruins were probably full aware of what Bergeron and Krejci's plans were, and that didn't mean jack when they got pummeled by the Panthers, right? So, but in terms of each individual player and Ullmark and all that's been hovering over him, yeah, I'm sure the Bruins are at least hoping that he takes, you know, some of this, these tough tests that have been kind of hanging over him and makes the most of them in terms of this run, because at the very least, you're going to have a goalie with something to prove, I think, in these next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think the something to prove is the biggest of like, hey, you want to trade me? I want to show that, you know, I'm the better goalie, and that I can kind of deliver a bit more than you think I can. Also in back, Andrew Peak, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk had a tough night on Monday. I know the game score was really bad. He was out there for a couple. Wouldn't shock me to see Andrew Peak in the lineup on Thursday in Montreal. The Peak trade's interesting because they give away a 2027 third round pick. I know it's far in the future. It's still a third round pick. And you also give up Zboril, who again, really wasn't working out here in Providence. That was kind of over. So it was really a third round pick for Andrew. Yeah. And you're eating his money, 2.75 for the next 2 years. Not a ton, but if, you know, things don't work out, then that's money that's on the books. I am curious though with Peak, and again, I have not watched a lot of Andrew Peak, so I can't be like, this guy, complete fraud. This guy's freaking sucks, okay? Or I can't be like, hey, he's nasty. I mean, this guy has so much untapped potential. I've watched so much film on Andrew Peak. I've always been an Andrew Peak guy. I can't do that either. What I can say is it's intriguing. It's intriguing, and the Bruins pro scouts have been pretty good at just, you know, looking at guys who are undervalued and seeing, hey, there's talent there that hasn't been tapped into. So it wouldn't shock me if Andrew Peak came in and over the next 2 years was a good, solid third pairing right shot defenseman. I also find it interesting that he was a second round pick in 2016. And, you know, in the NHL, he's mainly been a shutdown guy, a lot of block shots and things of that nature. Is there an offensive side? You know, again, I haven't watched enough of Andrew Peak to figure that out, but I'd be curious, like, Is there a better puck movement side of his game that warranted him being a high second round pick? I know it's 2016 is now like 8 years ago, which is crazy, by the way.
It's damn it, Evan.
Years ago. But still, I mean, at some point he was valued like that. But at the very least, I think a value get for the third pair, who's, you know, kind of a Derek Forbert replacement, who's maybe a little bit more mobile. Like, I think that's intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I think, a bit of a gamble for the Bruins in terms of this is a guy that the underlying numbers don't look very pretty. It's not when you bring up any shot and it's immediately red. That's usually not a good sign.
Or the minus 60. That's also not the best look.
Yeah, fell out of favor with a pretty bad Blue Jackets team, only played 23 games. And again, I think it's all about setting realistic expectations. Like, again, as you said, the Bruins pro scouting staff has been really solid. You've heard a lot of reports. I think it was Elliot Friedman said on his 32 Thoughts podcast that a lot of, you know, pro scouts think that Peak has a little bit more to give and he can really benefit from being in the Bruins defensive structure and get more out of him. And again, I think it's all about being realistic, right? Like, is this guy all of a sudden, it's not like this is a guy that you'll get his underlying numbers and like his transition game is really good or there's like
Chad Bradford Moneyball.
Yeah, it's not anything that I think, you know, with more, it's not like a Morgan Geeky where it's like, all right, with more reps, this guy could evolve into a productive third line player or something like that. Like, I think Peak, you know, is what he is, but if he can be your third pairing guy that you can walk in there, that can block shots, can deliver hits, and I think that's where they think he can add a little bit more, you know, of that pugnacious kind of skill set to that third pairing role. It's not just he's like a D-zone heavy block shots, but, you know, does the little things, the stick work. He can also land some hits, add some physicality, clear out the net front. If he can just carve out that role and be simple meat and potatoes kind of player there, and carve out a role like that, I think the Bruins will welcome it, right? Like, and that is, again, 2 years, $2.75 million. If he evolves into just a steady third pairing guy, 16, 17 minutes a night, you know, almost like Jeremy Lozon, right? Like, on, you know, mm-hmm. maybe he's not the flashiest guy, but can play that role, carve out a spot there, and do what he can in that spot. I think he'll take that for the Bruins, but it, again, remains to be seen. Like, he needs to build up, get his game back in order, see how he adjusts to this system where the Bruins have kind of a more complicated zone style defensive structure. Bruins think he can benefit from it, but it also falls on him. I don't think it's just like a plug and play, like all of a sudden his metrics are going to spike, or even if he's playing at a high level, he's probably not a guy that his underlying numbers are going to pop out to you. Like, even Brennan Carlo's numbers aren't really that flashy, but you see where mm-hmm. his value is for what he brings. Yes. If a guy like Pete can do that in maybe a lesser elevated role in the third pairing, I think he'll take that if you're the Bruins.
I agree. I just can't get over the early second rounder where it's like, because again, I don't remember him being picked. I wasn't around, covering hockey back then, but it would be interesting. I wasn't born then. No, I was a 2018 baby. So it's been I'm kind of a life veteran at this point. I mean, we really think True. About it. But I would be curious to see like why. I mean, again, Forbert was a first round pick, like, and I mean, we can guess with that big, left shot defenseman at that time, coming out of North Dakota, all that stuff. But it's interesting. I don't know. I'm curious to see what they have with Peak. Obviously, if things don't work out with him, that when 2027 draft rolls around, it's like, would have liked to have had that. But again, I think it's a calculated risk. It's a calculated gamble. So not too against that. But anyways, that has been this week's Bruins Beat. Again, presented by our good friends over at Prize Picks. Use code CLNS. You get $100 up to $100 back. You deposit up to $100. They give you up to $100. So it is, again, I don't know why you wouldn't do it. Anyways, Connor, what can people look forward to from you over at the Globe and Boston.com?
Yes, we'll have you covered every step of the way this season, even with the trade deadline done. We're looking ahead at the playoffs now. We're looking at matchups, what the Bruins need to do to get their game rolling here. All that good stuff over at Boston.com and the Globe, so you can read my stuff there. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at ConnorRyan_93.
You almost forgot your own Twitter.
Because I didn't call it X. I lose track of what I should even call it now. I still call it Twitter. Who cares?
Oh, I do too. I don't call it X. But anyways, that's Bruins Beat.
Even though there's an X literally logo.
I just noticed that. It's on the YouTube thing.
Fine. So fine. Whatever. Who cares?
Cover it up. It says Twitter. Clearly, it's a little bird. But anyways, that's Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinovsky. Bruins Beat listeners, have a great rest of your week.